Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Now, today's guest is an absolute gent, someone we've wanted on here for quite some time. He's a YouTuber and a journalist, and he probably, in fact, I'd say definitely, has got the best job in the world. You may know him as Chris Eads from 44 Teeth, or you may know him as his online stage name, the wonderful Baron Von Grumble. Welcome.
Thank you very much, boys. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So nice to have you on, Chris. As Ewan said, we've done this for a while now, and yours is one of the ones we've been waiting for a very long time. So we're going to make the absolute most of you, my friend. So sit back, get yourself ready, because you're about to get peppered with questions. Now, there's so much that we want to get stuck into, but let's go right to the crux, to the heart of the matter. Where does this love, this devotion to all things two wheels come from?
That's a big question. Where does it come from? I mean, I had a bit of a strange journey into bikes. Like, growing up, wasn't into them at all, didn't really pay much attention to them. I liked my push bike and going out with my mates and, you know, cycling into the woods and hitting trees with sticks and building camps and stuff. But then I think it was around 2008, and my brother was quite into, like, vintage Vespas and stuff like that. And so he was like, oh, you got to get one. And at that point, I had a production company in London. So I would be commuting in and out on the train. And I can't do the public transport thing, not because of any snobby reasons, but just like being under someone's control. You're late, you know, oh, there's a leaf on the track, can't go anywhere. So I was like, you know what, I need to get a bike. So I bought this Lambretta, which I think lasted about a mile before it exploded. And but I really enjoyed the experience. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get a bike. And I lived down at the time, well, I still live there now, actually, in Farnham. So it's like about an hour commute on a bike right into Soho, much quicker than the train. And I think I think my first bike was a Suzuki Bandit 600N. So nothing particularly special there. But I just loved the feeling of being on a bike. And within a year, I was on a Repsol Fireblade. So that's how it kind of started. And but yeah, I was 30 at that point, so I kind of missed out on a lot of the knowledge, because motorcycling, there's a lot of knowledge, and it's quite easy to feel out of your depth when you first start, because there's so much stuff to learn, which is awesome. So I started commuting on the bike. One of the guys who worked with me, he did this thing called motor vlogging. And this was back in 2008. Ollie333, shout out to you if you're listening. And he was like, oh, you should try this thing where, you know, you put cameras on your head and you talk stuff. And I was like, Matt, that sounds so nerdy. There's no way on earth I'm doing that. It's like, that's for losers. And then I started getting a bit in trouble with the law for a bit, let's say, fruity riding. So I kept getting pulled over. And then I kept getting bored. So I was like, you know what? Okay, give me a camera. I'll give it a go. And that was it. And he was like, oh, what's your name? What do you want it to be? I was like, I don't know. Just literally Baron Von Grumble, because I moan a bit about stuff. And that was it, really. And that's where it started. So it all just happened. No plan.
I love that. I love the fact, though, you got into it quite late. Prots did as well, whereas I was youngsters tearing around on mopeds at like the age of 12 and, you know, riding bikes I shouldn't have been. And then I had a bit of a time off with bikes and came back to it. But I think we'll all agree that love of bikes, it gets you. Doesn't matter if you're 30 or 13. Once you ride a bike, you get it. And I was actually going to ask you know, nowadays you wear many hats, many helmets, if you like. Is there a day job? But there obviously was a day job. And I alluded to it in the introduction. It seems to me you've got the best job in the world. But when did this then become your job, from sticking those, you know, cameras on your helmet, calling yourself Von Grumble, having a bit of fun? When did you actually think, hang on a minute, I can make a living from this? This is something I love doing and I want to share my story.
So I think that probably, I still have my day job, my day job, so which is basically a creative director, graphic designer type motion graphics stuff. So I still do that because, you know, anyone that's tried to enter the motorcycle industry and make a lot of money, is going to be often, more often than not, quite disappointed, because it's a tough place to make money. Mainly because everyone wants to do it, because it is, as you say, the best job in the world and everyone loves it. So it's a bit of a race to the bottom in terms of finances. So you've got to be really quite shrewd and clever about how to actually make money, which I'm still trying to work out. So then... After doing the Baron von Grumble stuff, that, to be honest, never really made any money. That was just enjoyment, side hustle. And back in those days, YouTube was totally different. Like, to make £100 off a video on YouTube, you had to get like a shitload of views, like a lot of views. Mm. And so it was always kind of just there in the background. And then I did an interview with Fast Bikes, and Al, who worked with Fast Bikes, he invited me down to Portimao to do a track test for one of their sports bikes of the years. So I went down there, got on really well with Al. At that point, Fast Bikes was being bought out or something, and it was going to move locations. Anyway, we're chatting to Al, and I was like, well, look, let's see if we can do something. Let's see if we can blend the traditional magazine, which, let's face it, breaks my heart, but in a sad way, it's, you know, printed magazine, as we all know, is, you know, a very difficult industry to be in. Mm. And then see if we can do something while taking that professionalism and then move it into the modern sphere. So that's when 44 Teeth started. And that was when it was, I mean, it's hard to say, look, it's crazy to say looking back on it, because you look at it and it's not a very professional organization, because we're just lads, you know, going about on bikes. But the aim was to be able to have an outlet to take all that content and actually create a living from it. So, that was probably, I mean, that's been going 10 years now, which is incredible. That's, I guess, where it came from. And, you know, the experiences I've had, the amazing things I've been able to do in my life in that has been well worth the anguish and pain sometimes of trying to pay the bills. Because as much as you want to ring up HSBC and go, you know, sorry, I can't pay my mortgage this month, but I've got a load of free socks from an influencer campaign, it doesn't really work like that. It's just been growing from there. And we're ready to take it to the next step. There's lots of exciting things going on at the moment, which maybe I might allude to, but it's all good.
I mean, the sense of what you're talking about there, Chris, because it does, I mean, given the time frame that you're talking about, it really does feel like it's at the infancy of what YouTube would be, what motor vlogging would be. I watched the European tour, which, and then you get, obviously, with your algorithm, it chucks things at you on an hourly basis. Yeah. And you look at it and you think, oh my God, that was quite a while ago. And you, and how quickly times change, and how there's slight differences in that kind of motor vlogging sphere. But it's almost kind of looking at you as one of the original and best, because, like you say, it's very raw, it's very authentic. If you stood in the pissing rain, it's pissing it down and you're talking away. Like, quick wipe of the helmet, quick wipe of the lens, and going off again. And obviously, I would sincerely hope, and you strike me as a man that wouldn't be the case. You don't live and die by the comments, but all the comments are, love this, I feel like I'm there, I'm enjoying every minute of it with you, even though I'm not sat in the way you are, and all that type of thing. So I think, given what you've seen then, and when you move forward with the plate spinning, with, like you say, 44 Teeth, and obviously Pitbox as well, something that hopefully you'll give us a bit of insight into, it's going back to Ewan's question about multifaceted. It is so multifaceted. I mean, do you ever get in your kind of sphere and spectrum, is there anything that you think, no, we can't do that? Because it sounds like you pretty much, we can and we will, and we'll give most things a go. It feels like you're that type of man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of, I guess, a serial entrepreneur. And I don't like that word, entrepreneur, particularly, but I can see opportunities everywhere. The difficulty is being able to follow it through. And the hardest bit, and I think if anyone's tried to build a business in any industry, the hardest bit is getting good people around you to be able to trust, rely on, and help drive that business forward. So, you know, again, we're at a bit of a crossroads at the moment where there's so many opportunities, and like you said, Pitbox, which I'll get onto in a minute. So many amazing things that I want to do, but it's like, okay, well, hang on, we can't quite do that yet because we need this in place, this, 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 and this. So it is very overwhelming. I mean, in some respects, but you've just got to keep those plates spinning. And you know, I'm not one for turning down an opportunity. So if anything, I mean, it's great because sometimes it works out fantastically, but in other times I do take on a bit too much and try and go, okay, let's keep this going. But you know, you quickly get a feel for what's going to work and what isn't going to work. And you know, going back to the YouTube thing, that and social media generally, that landscape has changed and continues to change violently. Like, it is the quickest, you know, algorithms. You mentioned algorithms. I mean, it's impossible now to open up your phone and go, oh, I subscribe to, you know, this channel, this channel, this channel, and actually see that content in a chronological order. It just doesn't exist anymore. And so you've got to, you do have to sort of, you know, massage the teat of the social media platforms and figure out how that works and make sure you've got the thumbnail, make sure you've got the title right, make sure you don't say too many bad words, you know, which is quite difficult for me. I'm a bit sweary and I'm trying my best today actually to keep it clean. So there is a lot going on, but it's all super exciting. And it's just, you know, I want to make sure I try to give each area of those businesses the best possible attention. So yeah, it's
when you have successfully massaged that teat, do let me know, because I've got no idea when it comes to social media. I'm the same. I think, oh, this is going to hit, this is going to do really well. Oh no, it's terrible. I do another one which I think that's a bit average, but I may have said the right word or posted at the right time, and I find that quite frustrating. But for you as a career, I know obviously you said you've got your proper job if you want, but you know, it can be frustrating when you make some social media or some content which you think is going to be great and it doesn't quite hit for some reason. But like Pratt said, looking at your comments on all your stuff, I think because you're so passionate, I can tell just from talking to you're relatable and people love seeing you out on the bike. I mean, you found the niche, and I hope it continues for a long time, because it certainly works what you do. And you've been doing YouTube, I think, for about 13 years. I know YouTube has changed a lot, but you're the consistent, you're still around. So people clearly want to see you. So you're doing something right.
Well, that's it. And you know, authenticity, you mentioned it earlier, is super important. So you've got to be able to present that authentic vision. And as you know, motorcycling can be a massive pain in the ass sometimes. It's raining, you've got a problem with your bike, you're miles away from anywhere, it's gone wrong. But it's like, well, this is the reality of it. And that's what makes those journeys when you're doing these epic adventures, that's what makes it, you look back at it and go, oh, that was actually really good. Even though it was a crap time, it was like, yeah, well, we figured it out, we persevered. So authenticity is super important. Yeah. But it's the razor's edge of being authentic, yet trying to make a business. Everyone's got to make money in some way that you can. So, you know, picking good partners and good sponsors, we're really lucky. We've got some great partners who are willing to, you know, dangle a foot over the edge here and there, but not be quite, you know, that is super important as well.
Because that's the other part of it that kind of is really fascinating about brands and brand kind of collaborations and sponsors. As you say, it's a huge part of what the business is. Does that mean there's a fair bit of hustling at your end, or given how long you've been in the game, you're in a nice position where people are coming to you and saying, do you fancy doing X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, lots of people, I mean, a lot of them are strange, like bot accounts from like a leather manufacturing company that's like, hey, I love your profile, can you, you know, do this and stuff. So you've got to filter that out. but we are lucky in that respect, but it still takes a lot of management. And you know, you've got to present, you're not dealing with, when you get onto the higher echelons of brands, they have, you know, very strict rules, guidelines, all that sort of stuff, which you need to know that information. So then you can go, okay, well, what can we do that's within that to actually be able to create content that our consumers, our fans are going to really love. So there is a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. It's not just like, here, have some money, go and do some stuff. I wish it was as easy as that.
How careful do you have to be, though? Like, for example, you know, you got a brand wanting to give you the latest all singing and dancing bike that does everything for you, but yet you're putting out a post saying, hang on a minute, if I'm honest, I love the feel of an old bike. You know, you don't have to have all the traction control and the anti-wheelie functions on there. Riding an old bike is what it's all about. You're there, you're feeling it, you're feeling the engine, you're loving it. So when you're doing posts like that, which I think are brilliant, you know, when you're just saying, actually, I think an old bike's slightly better than the modern bike, does that then sort of cut your nose off to spite your face a little bit if a brand's, no, they're all good?
No, that's totally fine because, all of the big brands, like all the premium brands, nobody makes a bike anymore. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's all about what flavor of ice cream do you like? It's not about, you know, oh my God, this is bad. They're all fantastic. Like all of the top tier brands make amazing bikes. Most of the problems with modern motorcycles is restrictions, EU safety features, you know, ABS systems, which, you know, we were just at a track day the other week at Castle Combe and, you know, the amount of danger that those safety systems put into a motorcycle is quite high. But the manufacturers, they have to conform. They have to do that. It's the same with everything. You know, a new bike will come out and have a whacking great exhaust on it. And, you know, a lot of the consumers are like, oh, that exhaust is disgusting. You know, why do we put that on it? It's like, well, you have to. So they're in a situation where they totally understand that the consumer may want that more organic feel of whatever, but you have to put a ride-by-wire throttle on it because of emissions. You've got all this stuff going on with the, you know, inside the airbox and all of this stuff, which you cannot do with a manual throttle, for example. So the brands themselves are totally fine with whatever you want to say, because that's what makes it authentic. And, you know, if you just turned up and did a review on something and went, that was rubbish, but didn't justify why, then you'd probably get in, you know, they wouldn't be your best mate moving forward. But it's about what you can experience on those modern machines, which are incredible. But, you know, you're talking 30 grand for a top spec modern superbike when there's a beautiful 916 just out of shot here, which is probably about 8 grand. And the enjoyment that some people would get for that would be much greater than a new bike. But other guys want to go, no, I want the latest and greatest. I want to turn up, I want to know it works, and I want the performance level to be what I have purchased. Whereas we all know old bikes are super cool, but the performance levels are quite dramatically lower.
I think as well, and Ewan and I have discussed it many times when we're speaking to people that are vastly more experienced and know more about bikes than we do, i.e. like yourself, Chris. I would say, and this is me not talking on behalf of layperson bikers around, but the little nuances of horsepower and torque and all that, I mean, they're lost on me. Like, my bike's, what, knocking on 8 years old now, and Not, I'm just happy that it starts, but when it starts first time, brilliant. Have a little look. I've cleaned it. The chain's clean. I'm not going to try and get my knee down. Yep, let's go. We're off. You know what I mean? So there is an element where you kind of go, if it gets you from A to B, and this is what the podcast is about. It's as much about the feeling, isn't it, rather than what it can kind of do mechanically, because I know for a fact, unless that's my personality changes completely in the next 6 years, I'm not going to be able to try and get the most out of a motorbike that it possibly can. I just want to enjoy it from A to B with a few tunes on, which I think, I suppose, speaks for quite a few people getting into biking it, maybe at a later stage as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's what you want to enjoy, and that's your personality. That's what you want. Some people want to know that they've got this most ridiculous, incredible machine, which in my opinion, you know, you can't. These 210, 15, 20 horsepower monsters on the road, you know, it's not that fun in a lot of situations because you can only go 30, 40, 50 mile an hour for most of your ride. So, you know, it's about the experience. But then if that's what makes that person feel great, then go for it. Exactly. You know, and I think we come across that differential, I guess, in our fans and our subscribers, because some people have a certain opinion on how they think a bike should be. Some people have another opinion about how a bike should be. And the discord in the comments section, I value that. I think that's great because it's like, well, you know, yeah, that's not the bike for you. Of course, you're not going to want to go and spend, you know, 30 grand on a, you know, Panigale V4S, when actually you'd probably be fine with a 20-year-old Gixxer. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's fine. But you get a lot of tribal sort of to and fro. But you know, sometimes it's best just to stay out of those arguments and just let them happen. As long as they're posting, it's all good for the algorithm.
We're all different, aren't we, in terms of we've all got different levels of ability as well. You know, I remember borrowing a blade for a while and I went, take it back, I'm going to kill myself. My riding capability is far outweighed by the performance of this bike, so I'll settle for something a bit smaller, a bit more usable. And you know, we're all different. Let's talk about Pitbox if we can, because I think it's absolutely brilliant. I know of lots of storage companies for high-end supercars and stuff, but I haven't really seen many top quality storage facilities for a motorbike. And at first I thought, would there be a market for that? And I was thinking, actually, 100%. You know, I, for example, had a couple of bikes and my missus was moaning and my boys were saying, it's a bit dangerous, Dad. This is a perfect opportunity for me to buy a secret bike without the missus knowing, store it down the road up on the A3 with you and come and get it when I want. So I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I mean, this whole business, I'm in there now. I'm in, right in the back of the sort of man cave bit. And it was born out of, you know, we were looking for a space to expand into with 44 Teeth and all the other sort of associated businesses. So we needed like a great, cool, big warehouse space to shoot in, store the merch in, run our operations from. And it was like, okay, well, that's quite expensive to do that. Oh, actually, you know, well, we've got a load of space in here. Let's you know, rent out some space to some subscribers or, you know, friends or whatever. And then it was like, and the more I looked into it, I thought, hang on a minute, there is something really, really good here. And, you know, a lot of, if anyone's stored a car or a bike somewhere else, a lot of them are on sort of back end of farm buildings, like old stables. They're a bit damp. Not, you know, I'm not poo-pooing anyone else out there, but it's not, they're not very advertised because there's a security issue. There's all this sort of stuff. And there's no sense of community, which is what we want to produce with Pitbox. So, you know, we are trying to get to the space where we've got, it's a fair price. You know, you can't rip people off. It's a fair price for having your bike looked after. We can go and pick it up. We can bring it down here. If you want to come down and you're a member, it's quite, we're trying to get to this sort of membership feel where you feel like you've got somewhere to go. You feel like you can have a coffee here. You can, you know, get changed, store your leathers, store. Yes. And it's also not just about storing bikes, because almost every bike that comes through the door has got about three boxes of crap as well. Because you've got this spare exhaust, you've got some wheels, you've got, you know, all of the detritus that comes with it. So we're kind of just feeling our way through that. But in terms of a business model, it's, you know, insurance is another massive issue for people. If you live inside London or any sort of big city, even if you've got 20 years of riding experience, the insurance company are just like, sorry, we're just not interested, and you can't get insurance, or you get quoted $3,000 or something ridiculous on a superbike. So, and those people don't want to get rid of their bikes. They love their bikes. They mean a lot to them. So it's like, well, what do I do? Well, you can store it here. You can come down and get it. We'll look after it. We'll you know, make sure that it's running right. If we, you know, that's one of the goals. But also your insurance costs will be so much cheaper. I mean, everything's insured in here anyway, but for a road policy, it's like, well, actually it's insured at this location, which is super secure. There's always someone in it, and whatever they spend on the actual storage for the vehicle often comes back in terms of what they saved on their insurance. Yeah. So it's kind of a win-win. And, you know, we would like to have, as we grow, like a Pitbox Manchester, Pitbox Edinburgh. Everyone should have access to a Pitbox to store their toys and be a destination where they feel like, oh, okay, let's go down there, do some ride outs together, go to Goodwood, you know, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. We're going to take some guys down there and just enjoy motorcycling. And so, yeah, it's one of those things that started, oh, that'd be easy and simple, but it then starts growing because you can see the opportunity. And, you know, it excites me massively, that.
It sounds to me, like you said, a win-win situation. Your bike's not just stored somewhere securely and safe where it's going to be looked after. But as you said, I think we've chatted to so many people, and biking is so sociable. It really is an event. And some people who don't have any immediate riding friends who live near them, it sounds ideal. You can meet there. You can go from there. You go for a ride out. You bring your bike back. Yep. You get in your car. You go home. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to visit. And if I do buy a secret bike, I'll be one of your customers soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We should advertise on like divorce lawyer websites and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's like, don't get a divorce.
Hide your assets here.
Yeah. Hide your assets here. So you either don't get divorced because you've hidden all your bikes, or if you are getting divorced, you need to hide your bikes, put them here, and sort you out. Yeah. Oh no, sir! You just got that one really cheap bike with us. So, yeah.
The great bit about it is as well, and if we're looking at the pictures and videos and stuff, I mean, it's immaculate as well. And I mean, most man caves that you come across, I mean, we've spoken to people who've got barns and sheds and stuff stored and stuck under tarpaulins and all that. I mean, it's going to be that nice, Chris. You're going to get people. You'd be like knocking on your watch, going, "Right, can you mosey on off now, guys? Because we do need to make sure that things are locked up and secure." It's such a nice place to hang out. You might have an opportunity where you're just trying to kick people out, surely.
Well, if we get there, then we've succeeded, right? Mm. So, I mean, I'd live here. This is like my dream man cave. There's something above here. You got your couch, you got your bed, you got your big TV, you got your PlayStation, you got all the toys.
I've just thought of something for you. It's got to be an Airbnb, bike and beds. That's it. New Airbnb place. Come along, have a couple of bunk beds. People can stay for the long weekend. Job done.
Absolutely. And outside as well, there's a really nice. There's like a really nice field out there, so you can have like barbecues, events, and stuff. So that's where we want to go. And yeah, we're just working furiously to try and get there and get it going. Which it feels really, really good. And I think I can see that the business being franchised again around the country. So everyone should have access to this type of community. And as you say, that, you know, not everyone's got bike mates. So it's like, look, I'm not that people want to go that far. You know, you see people at the weekend just going down to bike dealers for a cup of tea and some tires just because it's somewhere to go. But we'd be quite exclusive though. So
That's me out.
To come in.
Let's have a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Right, we need to go back to the start. And the start, as you said there earlier on, Chris, is not right back to the start when we're talking about little boys. It's about where we're a slightly older gentleman and you pass your test when you're a little bit older, something that I can relate to with you. So it's funny because you do your car test when you're still kind of wet behind the ears. When you do it, a bike test when you're a little bit older, there's a sense of trepidation. You actually do the homework to make sure that you're faster and take it seriously. And then when those immortal words come that they say, "Congratulations, you've passed," how did that feel?
I mean, yeah, it was amazing. I remember because I'd only ridden, obviously you only ride like 125s or what, I can't remember what the system is now, but before. So even on the test because I think I did a direct access. And again, people ask me all the time, the rules seem to change. I'm not, I'm not particularly down with A2, A1, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But when I did it, I think we did it on CB500s. And even that, pulling onto a slip road on a 500 was like, it blew my mind. It blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's like flying, isn't it? And that was an amazing feeling of just the freedom of that.
Yeah.
And then when you do get that, you've passed. I mean, I think, it was to me, it was life-changing because my life then went down a route which I had never even conceived of before and led me to some amazing experiences. So at the time, I didn't know that, obviously, but I knew there was something that deeply connected with me. I'm the type of person that does love the freedom of things. Well, I don't like public transport being, confined. I like to be under my own steam and, When you first get out there on the road and you realize all the things that make motorcycling great is things you can't pick up on in a car, where, you go through a little tree wooded area and the temperature drops you'll smell like the fields you're driving through and all of these little experiences, which you're so connected to the environment. And it's realizing that on the first few rides was like, okay, this is me.
Yeah. There's nothing like it. You can go in a car on a journey. It could be an exciting little B road or something. But yeah, you get a slight thrill out of it. But there's nothing like. Sorry to butt in you.
Just on smells. There, the one that threw me first of all was rain. You know, when obviously you know, you can, let me explaining rain to people. You can see when rain's coming and it's a bit cloudy. Obviously, like it always is in England. But when you've got your head, you have that little whiff and you go, that smells like rain. And then obviously the next minute you're sat in. Sweat through game and it's not much fun, but you do go, oh wow, that's almost like a brand new sense that's just hit me there. It's such a, like you say, it fundamentally I think changes the way that you interact with your environment, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, and yeah, as I've got older and older, I've got more into mental health stuff and yes, meditations and things like that. Which, you know, as a young man, you're like, well, whatever, that's weird, don't need any of that. But actually, I find a lot of comparisons with riding a motorcycle is like a form of meditation, because it's all about being present. And when you're riding a bike, you are in that moment, particularly if you're, yeah, you know, got a bit of a lick on and you're, you know, focusing. It's particularly on track, actually. You cannot think of what email you didn't send, or you should have done something yesterday, or this is happening tomorrow. You're in that moment and you are totally focused in that present time, because if you get distracted, take a minute off, you know, you could be in some serious trouble. So it forces you into this mindset, which is very freeing, because that's why people, I think a lot of people chase adrenaline sports, because they are so focused in that present moment. Yeah. And yeah, it's a really interesting crossover from what people think motorcycling is and who the big, like, you know, when my mum, for example, like, oh, there's lots of, you know, big hairy bikers outside. It's kind of, it's so different when you actually look at the demographic of motorcyclists, who they are. And yeah, there's a really interesting crossover there, which I'm trying to, you know, look into further. It's good.
It's a real escapism, isn't it? Like you said, it doesn't matter what emails you forgot to reply to, or did you leave the oven on, whatever. You can't worry about anything about you, your safety, and your here and now. And no two bike rides are ever the same, be it weather conditions or roads you take or, you know, traffic conditions. It's just you at one with your bike, and it's so special. And can we talk about your bikes a bit? Because yeah, you mentioned very fondly about passing your test, you know, on a 500, and you're, wow, this is like I'm flying. And, you know, having seen your YouTube videos and your amazing collection of bikes you have now, it's like you literally have got the dream collection of bikes. I mean, do you have a favorite? Can you have a favorite? Because they're all special to you for different reasons, because they evoke those memories, don't they? That the passionate, yeah, connections you have with those bikes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a video on 44 Teeth, which I think you're probably referring to, which we shot in here, where I had all, like, finally, all my bikes were kind of in one place. And first of all, I'm super fortunate to be able to be in a position where I've got all of those dream bikes. Like, you know, I fully appreciate, and I'm so grateful to be able to be there. And, you know, the reasons I've got that is because I'm in the industry. You get a little whisper, like, oh, actually, someone wants to sell their bike. Oh my God, I want one of those. I'm going to have it. Or their old budget bike battle bikes or stuff that we've used in the past and gone, I love this thing. I'm not going to sell this. So that's how the sort of collection, if you like, grew. But on the favorites thing, I've got some amazing bikes I'm super lucky to have, but I don't have that much of an emotional connection to them because I haven't experienced much on them. So the ones that I love the most are the ones that I've done most things with. And it's probably, you know, arguably one of the most bland bikes in here, which is my old GSXR 1000 K7, which I started doing the videos on. I used to ride it in and out of London, all weathers, super reliable, that thing. That looked after me. I went down the green lane on it. That was the one that capsized into that massive puddle. And I did my first solo tour around Europe on it. Had no idea what I was doing when I set off. I just put some bags on the back and went, oh, okay, let's just go. And that bike is, you know, is very, very dear to me. Likewise with the GS, you know, I love my GS 1250 because it's an enabling bike. It's the one that, yeah, I can just go and enjoy. It's the easiest, yeah, one. You just, yeah, it's there. It can carry all your stuff. You can just sort off. I just went round. But I'm about to go through the editing, actually. I just did we had three bike launches coming up few weeks ago. One was in Nice, Ducati XD Arval, and then Slovenia was a Tracer 9 GT Plus Yamaha, yeah. and then there was a Bridgestone tire launch down in Croatia in Split. And they're all pretty close together. And I was like, do you know what? We finished all the Budget Bike Battle Cinema stuff. That was a massive, you know, massive effort. I'm going to ride. So I just loaded up the GS and just went Nice, all the way up through Italy, through the Alps, Austria, down into Slovenia, another launch, job done. You know, got up, drove then down the Dalmatian coast to Croatia, did that, and then sort of went back into Bosnia and through that way and just went home. So, yeah, now I have a load of memories on that vehicle.
Can I ask, are you quite mechanically minded in terms of the route you've just said? I think in my head, oh my God, I'd love to do that. But if anything goes wrong with my bike, I've got no idea how to fix it. Prats is a little bit better at tinkering than me, but are you quite handy with a spanner?
I'd never open up an engine. I'm definitely not there. But over the years of fiddling around, I do enjoy it. And, you know, I've got a track R1 that we built for a project, road bike to race bike. And I did quite a lot of the stuff on that, sort of putting new forks in it, all that sort of stuff. And but I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I've got Crescent down the road who I sort of build it and then take it there and go, can you just check it in case I've screwed something up and nothing's going to work. But yeah, bleeding brakes, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm. Yeah, I'm all right. But again, on a modern bike that's under warranty, you haven't really got much to worry about, to be honest.
A GS as well, because, like, I mean, that's literally what they're built for, especially the I had one, an adventure a very long time ago, which was brilliant. And exactly like you say, jump on it, it gets you where you want to go. And it's intriguing because you talk about those types of bikes and the super reliable bikes. Since the football season's finished, I've been to Mallorca for a couple of days with the kids and was in Zurich at the weekend with my daughter watching the Lionesses. That's a different chat entirely. But their approach to motorcycle ownership and running feels a bit like what you were trying to say about talking to your mother about coming away from hairy bikers. You'd see a fella in a three-piece linen suit looking amazing, jumping on his GS. You know what I mean? He's obviously off to a business meet, open-face helmet. Yeah. And I'm just picturing myself equivalent of England getting somewhere, taking the helmet off, your barnets all over, you're sweating cobs, you know what I mean? You've got your big coat on and all that type of stuff. There is a distinct difference to it, but nearly all of the people they're all on super manageable, reliable bikes, isn't it? Mm. And that, like you say, the ones that you're most fond of are the ones that you know that chuck your leg over, it's getting you to where you need to go. So when Ewan's asking about the maintenance of it, those are very low maintenance. And also from a computer point of view, the trip dash just blows your mind anyway, doesn't it? So you're not going to be going, let me just get this off and have a quick look into that. So the reliability factor and that kind of cool factor, I think that it sounds a bit immature to say that, was something that I'd noticed by being on the continent and viewing bikers remotely, not having unfortunately been there on my bike in this time around.
Yeah, and on the continent, you know, the UK generally hates motorbikes. You know, there's about 2 months of the year that you can actually ride them properly. Yeah. And, you know, the government hates you. Insurance companies hate you. It's quite a difficult, you know, it's difficult to pass your test. The barriers to entry are massive. So it's a bit of a different culture in the UK. But as soon as you go abroad, particularly Spain or southern continents, Italy, and definitely into Eastern Europe, if you're on the side of the road and you've got a problem with your bike, I guarantee you some guy will stop and go, oh, you know, broken English, whatever. Are you okay? What can we do to help? The culture out there is totally different.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think it's part of the culture in terms of a lot of people in certain parts of Europe ride bikes, don't they? You know, they commute on Vespas or whatever it might be to start with. And biking's part of, it's in your blood, it's in your DNA, isn't it? Whereas in Britain, because of the weather, you know, not as many people ride.
Yeah, and, you know, Spain, you know, there's racetracks everywhere. They love their racing, and you know it's just a different motorcycling is just different out there. So when you are cruising around Europe, you know, and particularly me and probably you guys to a degree as well, if you get in trouble and your bike's broken, all it is a couple of posts on social media and be like, oh, I'm in Bosnia up this mountain. can anyone help? Or, you know, and someone, like, because the community is so amazing, someone will go, oh, actually, my mate lives around there. Da, 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 da. And before you know it, you've been rescued and you've got an amazing story because you stayed at a cool family's house and eating weird, you know, cows' testicles. Actually, cows don't have testicles. Bull testicles for dinner. And that's your awesome story to take away with you. So, you know, I do fancy there's a 916 project that I want to do. I've got a yellow 916, which has already been a bit fettled with. And over the years, I've bought, you know, upgraded forks for it, shock, like all like wheels and all this sort of stuff. And I'd like to build that bike as like a series and then do actually some touring on it, because it's an intense, it's not the most comfortable thing to ride, but it'll be a challenge. You know, let's see what happens. That's what it's like, not on the GS that's brand new with a warranty and you ring up BMW and they're there in 20 minutes to come pick it up. To do a bit more of that sort of stuff, so.
Hey Chris, I'd tell you what a challenge would be to do something on Ewan's bike.
Oh yeah, I've not got a very comfortable bike. I've got like an old, yeah, it's wicked. When I say to people I've got an old Harley, they're like, oh, boring old man, but it's like a Crossbones, but nothing, it's like a bobber. Nothing is standard on it anymore. It's been stripped back. It looks amazing, but it's got metal grips. Nothing's comfortable. I ride it for 5 miles and I've got to go home now. I'm too old for this. But it looks and sounds mint, yeah.
It's one of those things, isn't it? And everyone does it. You go through a point of going, oh, I'm going to put this on my bike. I'm going to put this on my bike. And I'm going to do that. And you basically just ruin it. And then when you come to sell it, you put all the old standard stuff back on it and ride it and go, oh, my God, this is brilliant. Why did I do all this stuff to my bike in the first place? But that's another thing, modifying. You know, I love all that modifications and thinking about that. And my day job is in like 3D animation, really, but I can do like CAD modeling stuff. So I really want to get a 3D printer, make some specific parts that motorcyclists will like. And, you know, that's another side of the business that could be run from the pit box space. It's like, you know, bespoke this, things like that, little fairing brackets, little mounts, and just, you know, there's lots to do.
The inbox that you create for yourself, Chris, is an amazing one, because it, like, as we said throughout the whole of this chat, about keeping yourself not busy to keep anything other than your mind occupied and obviously the bank balance happy, but because you absolutely love it as well. Was I reading that you bought a crash? Was it an S1000RR that you cleaned up and got back out on the road again? That you, again, when I said labor of love, it makes it sound like it's something that you find hard to do, and you obviously don't, because you love it. You love being able to mess around with it and fettle and rebuild. Is that something that you do quite often? And if you do, does it make it into that wonderful kind of collection of yours, or in pit box, or is that then built to move on to create cash flow? Is that what that's for?
Yeah, I mean, I love doing it. My biggest blockage about creating content is very difficult to, you've got to be super rigid and organized, and I'm not an organized person. That's like, if I have one super negative box, it's my timekeeping is not very good. I find it difficult to manage my time, and when things go up, like, it's like, oh my God, no, I don't even have time to do that. So absolutely, I love doing that. And that S1000, yeah, that was a kind of bought the bike, it was crash damaged, brilliant, did a little video series on it. And then ultimately sold it, because it's like, well, that project's been done now. So then you've made a bit of money on the bike. What else are you going to buy next? Okay, you can do that. Or you could buy two different bikes and then go, okay, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. So you can't hold on to everything forever. And I am actually going to be selling, I've said it for years, but I am actually going to be selling quite a lot of my bikes, just because the energy that they are consuming and taking up, they're kind of done now. And they don't, like, I've done everything I need to do on them. So it's kind of like, well, let's make room for a new chapter, a new project, a new thing, a new experience. And so I'm really trying to clear out a lot of the past stuff that doesn't necessarily give me, you know, good energy anymore. And it's not,
you'll end up missing it though. You'll end up buying them back.
I know.
If you're anything like me, you'll sell them and go, why did I sell that? And 2 years down the line, I'll have it back.
I know. But it's kind of, well, I can take that asset that I've created and then turn it into something else new. Yeah. It's kind of, they're done. So yeah, there's a lot of that. Or invest it into the business, you know, we need a fancy coffee machine and stuff like that. So these things need to be transmuted, I think is the correct word. You know,
can you put a number on them? I'm just, when you say about moving the bikes on, and I'm just thinking, because I was watching the the discussion through the bikes recently. Before you start transmuting stuff, I mean, we all do like nice posh coffee machines because we're all men of a certain age, and you get into that as well. But it is, I mean, you talk about not ones necessarily being your favourite, but have you got a ballpark figure to how many that you can throw your leg over?
Well, how many that work?
Yeah, or how many that work and how many altogether?
Not many. I mean, when I say work, it's just like flat batteries, no MOT kind of thing. There'd be most of them would be half a day bit of tinkering and you'd be back on the road. But I think, you know, the peak, I think I had about 18 bikes. And then and I know that sounds so sort of, you know, greedy and outrageous, but it's kind of, you know, you get to a point where the ones that I've already sold and got rid of, I didn't like coming in, seeing them and going, oh, I need to do that thing to that bike. Oh, it does need this, it needs an oil. It's another earworm, right? It's another thing in the brain that needs doing. Yeah. So you're like, do you know what? Actually, it seemed a shame not to use it and it'd be sitting there, you know, degrading effectively and not being used.
Not doing what it's there for,
Not doing what it's there for. So, yeah, there's quite a lot, 18. But I think it'd be good to get down to about 5 bikes that really, really matter.
It's like get rid of your least favourite children. We've all got one. We better not say it. Well, actually, this leads nicely on to, unfortunately, our last question. Then you've had so many amazing bikes that you love for different reasons.
Which kid would you give
away? Yeah, let's ignore the children one in case my boy sees this. I've got a favourite. Right, out of all the bikes you've had and ridden, here's a hypothetical nice little question to finish with for you. We want an idyllic image of you. So you're going to be on your favourite bike. You can ride anywhere you want. This is a fantasy ride into the sunset. You're listening to the favourite soundtrack of your life. And who are you riding with? So what bike would you go on? Where would you go? Who would be your partner in crime? And what music, if any, would you be listening to? You've probably already done this ride a million times, but anywhere you could go.
Not in this combination, though, because you're putting in a load of variables, and it takes me a long time to come to a decision, so this might be a long answer.
It's all right. We love your answers. It's all good.
I'm going to break it into two answers. I'm going to do a track race bike thing, because they're two distinct things. There's like adrenaline experience and then life experience. So I think track, I was amazed. For my 40th birthday, I bought myself a BMW HP4 race, and that was the most amazing piece of engineering. Carbon frame, like just incredible bike. And I got out of it before it kind of ended up costing me too much money. But that bike was, I mean, let's take out GP bikes and all that sort of stuff, but that bike round Mugello in a sunny, not too hot, you know, maybe spring, session round there, would be next level. And who would I have with me? I can't say it publicly because everyone's going to get arsey. I'd say,
bleep it out.
I'd say, who would I have with me?
You can be on your own if you want.
I'm going to fast forward a couple of years and say my lad, my son. He's not old enough yet, but I think and I'd drive there in the van as well, because I love a bit of a road trip. Drive there in the van with my son, do all that, and so I think that's the track bit. And then road, I think.
Any music? Sorry, Chris. Any music on the track?
Or are you
too busy? Yeah.
No. Right. No, I think that's a step too far. I'll just listen to the sweet, sweet hum of the inline 4 Alpha Superbike.
Is Chris, is it something your lad's getting into? You just mentioned him.
He loves it. He does love it. Although, you know, any dad looking at kids getting into motorbikes, it's amazing, but it's that horrible feeling of...
Absolutely, man.
Like, and I didn't, again, just quickly going back to the passing my test at 30, I think if I was on a bike in my 20s, I would have been in serious trouble. Like, I was a bit of a driving a car. And I think the day comes when you realize you don't have to drive a car to its full potential every single mile, that's when you can start thinking about getting a motorcycle. Because
it's such a good way to put it. You're right.
It's true.
You're right.
Yeah. And then road stuff. I think I would love to, and I've never even traveled to like Vietnam and Cambodia and all that stuff, but I would love to do like just load up the bike, and I would be on my own for this one probably. And it probably would be a GS 1250, which I'm lucky enough to have already.
Nice.
And I would just investigate all that region with all my gear on the back and just, yeah, go for it.
Any music? Any particular music? Yep.
I think that trip would probably suit some sort of 60s rock and roll, 70s sort of stuff. Nice. Like, you know, that sort of vibe. I think that would
be. I feel like I'm there now. It's like watching one of your videos, mate. I've just started daydreaming going, oh, that'd be amazing.
And do you know what? And the thing is, if I know you're strapped for time, but
No.
The best thing about that dream is that I am in a situation where I can make it happen. If I put my mind to it and go, actually, I'm going to ride around Vietnam and I'm going to make a series of videos, and I'm not going to make much money out of it, but I could certainly pay for it, which is, you know, that's half a step there. So
which goes back to my first question. I think you must have the dream job, and I think you've just answered it there. The fact that you actually could make that dream a reality, and you wouldn't be out of pocket, and you'd actually be bringing pleasure to your viewers as well, who want to come along with you. I think 100%, mate. You're winning in life because you're doing something you absolutely love. You're bringing the message to people. You're doing it in a humorous way as well, and. Yeah, it's been awesome talking to you, and long may it continue with what you're doing, because, yeah, as I said, it looks from the outside a dream job. I'm sure there's days when it's tough, but whatever you are doing, you're doing it well.
Thank you, mate. I really appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me on. It's been good catch up. And come down. Yeah, come down.
I will. You're just down the road. I'll pop to that McDonald's afterwards as well.
Let's do it.
And seeing again what we said about his bike, he can about make it from his house to yours and back without his ass falling.
Yeah. Borrow one of mine to take home. It's fine.
Yeah, sweet.
Oh, lads, it's been amazing. Sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat. Powered by Bike Show, of course, as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bike Show will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance, and much, much more, even if you've got 18 bikes in your shed.
Thanks so much to our brilliant guest this week, the one and only Chris Eads, a.k.a. Baron Von Grumble.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris. An absolute pleasure. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
As ever, thank you so much to everyone for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure. Until next time, goodbye.